This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, sitting in for Virginia Prescott. Of the many words of the moment, narcissism seems to be grabbing the spotlight, which it would, if you think about it. A simple Google News search will result in hundreds of headlines like Kim Kardashian, Queen of Narcissism, A Little Narcissism Never Hurt Anyone, and Study Finds That Narcissistic CEOs Have the Highest Salaries. But do these headlines indicate that we've become more narcissistic as a society, or are we using the word incorrectly? And what really separates a healthy dose of confidence from excessive conceit? Philosopher and professor Simon Blackburn ponders the nature of self-worth and how it has evolved over the centuries in Know Thyselfie, an essay we found at eon.com. Here he is speaking with Virginia Prescott.
The question of proper self-regard is one philosophers have been considering for some time, but therein lies the rub. It is the self pondering the self. Can that ever be accurate?
Well, it's a very good question. And, as long as it's been asked, there has been a drumbeat of, self-deception, the idea that we somehow put veils in front of ourselves, we don't appreciate our true selves. Famously, the poet Burns said, would some gift, if only we could have the gift to see ourselves as others see us. And equally, quite a lot of religious thinkers especially have thought you need a dark night of introspection. You need 40 days in the wilderness to come to terms with who you are. So we're not as transparent to ourselves as you might at first sight think.
How did that notion of knowing thyself evolve over the ages?
Well, I think it began to get a definite Christian flavor, of course. I think part of the extraordinary allure of the monastic tradition was the idea that it was in solitude, it was in withdrawal from other people, that you could best come to terms with yourself. I'm not sure that's true. I think the mirror is a very revealing instrument, and other people are mirrors to each other. Mm. I can learn who I am quite well by listening to other people, talking to other people, finding what they think about me, finding how I stand in the eyes of others. So solitude is not necessarily the answer, I think.
That seems to be part of the aim, at least in contemporary education and parenting, you know, putting kids inside of a room full of others and reinforcing self-esteem in children. What are the historical origins of self-esteem, and when did that become a goal?
Yeah. I don't think it became a goal until really quite recently. I looked at the British Library catalogue, which is the equivalent, I suppose, of the Library of Congress catalogue in the United States. And from about 1850, I think the first book with self-esteem as either a part of the title or part of the indexed content was written about 1850. And then until about 1960, there were very few. But since 1960, there's been certainly over 10,000, I think it was over 11,000 books with self-esteem as a principal topic. So I think we're looking at a very steeply ascending graph here.
And that goal of educating children with self-esteem has been, accurately or not, linked to a generation of kids who feel entitled to whatever they want or need in the world, vanity, always needing approbation. All of this gets kind of tossed into this idea of the culture of narcissism. Is that accurate to throw it all in together?
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, there are distinctions to be made. I think a proper self, the root notion of a self, of an esteem, is of an estimate. It's the idea of an estimate. So self-esteem should be having an estimate of yourself. And as with most things, estimates are better when they're reasonably accurate. If you overestimate yourself, you'll undertake things which could be disastrous. You might literally be riding for a fall if you overestimate your capacities as a horseman or as a rock climber. If you underestimate yourself, then of course you won't profit from opportunities you could have taken. You would be too shy or too modest to do things which you might have done very well. So you'd expect that the right thing would be, as so often, to find the mean, to find a judgment of yourself which is reasonably accurate. But this doesn't seem to be how it plays out in educational circles. Parents are made to feel terribly guilty about damaging their child's self-esteem, as if it was a sort of warm bath and the more of it you got, the better. I think that's a terrible mistake myself.
When you say something about the mean, you can't be too showy or considered crass. You can't play too small or you'll be stepped over. That's right. Always in comparison to others. But can we ever be truly free of that comparison?
Well, the philosopher who thought we could was Jean-Jacques Rousseau, the French philosopher, 18th century French philosopher. He sort of had a campaign, a long-standing campaign against what he called amour propre. An amour propre was essentially comparative. It was the appreciation or the concern for your standing in the eyes of others and your place in the pecking order. And he thought that was a really bad thing, and the key to a good life, the educational key, which he, in his tracts on education, he recommended, was going to be to get rid of amour propre. Just don't concern yourself with these issues of status and vanity and harvesting the good opinion of other people. Just go about earning your living and keeping body and soul together, and you'll be much, much happier. I think there's something in that, but again, it can be overdone, because an awareness of our relationship with other people is not always a bad thing. And that relationship will include things where we know that we are not very good, things where we know that we are slightly better than other people. And it's very hard to imagine human life being rounded or full if you get rid of all of that. So once again, I think there's a kind of simplicity about Rousseau's nostrum, Rousseau's medicine for the soul. And that's something that I enjoy talking about in the book as well.
We're talking with the philosopher and writer Simon Blackburn, who ponders the nature of self-regard and asks, can we cultivate self-worth without the vanity of self-love? Those are among some of the questions he considers in an article called Know Thy Selfie. Well, Simon Blackburn, we have mapped the neural pathways of the brain, right? But we have never yet located the self. So we need people to reflect back on us, upon us, who we are. Do you think that's the motivation behind the selfie?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think very often the motivation behind the selfie naturally arises from the nature of modern society. In a more restricted sort of village societies, everybody knows who everybody is. There's no need to parade it. There's no need to try and put your elbows out and shove your way to the front. In fact, that would be frowned upon. In modern urban society, and especially societies extended by means of social media networks and so on, finding an identity, making sure other people know who you are, is much harder. You don't want to be an anonymous face in a crowd. So I'm actually not a moralist. I'm not moralistic about teenagers slightly obsessively posting selfies. They're only a nuisance to each other. They're not a nuisance to me, except when they stand in art galleries and do it. I'm not too worried about that. I think Know Thy Selfie was a cute title. But I'm not down on the teenage habit of telling everybody what they're having for breakfast and showing everybody what it looks like when they clean their teeth and so on.
Well, you're not moralizing, but when I saw selfies taken with the California wildfires in the background, for example,
yes,
or car accidents, I was pretty mortified. So this has become sort of acceptable behavior in some circles anyway. Does that fit into this idea of the culture of narcissism? Or again, is that just getting thrown around too much?
I think there is certainly an element of narcissism. Obviously, if somebody thinks that the most important thing about a Californian fire is that they were there looking at it, or they were there standing in front of it, then something's gone wrong with their values. I think that's perfectly true. On the other hand, I think the impetus to say that here was I somewhere interesting is quite deep. I think it's very notable, I'm sure, that there's statistics about this, that nearly everybody takes more photographs when they're on holiday than when they're just about their home business. And more photographs still if they're on holiday somewhere very exciting. If I go to Mount Everest, I'd love to have a selfie taken of me standing in front of a good picture of Mount Everest, or the Taj Mahal, or New York City, for that matter.
What do you think Rousseau would have thought of the selfie?
I think he'd have been pretty appalled at the selfie. Rousseau was a moralist. He was a much stricter moralist than me. And he seemed to be almost pathologically frightened of vanity. It's interesting that he himself had the thinnest of skins. He was, quite pathologically aware of what other people were thinking about him, about his standing in society. And of course, partly that's true of court life. If you're trying to make an impression on the people who matter at court, then of course you become, hypersensitive to slights and insults and even the smallest kind of setback or rebuff can seem like the end of your career. So I think it's a vice of politicians and courtiers that they become hypersensitive in this way. And Rousseau is very conscious of that in his own case and very anxious that nobody else should be like that.
So do you think we are in some kind of age of narcissism, or is this just another point in the evolution?
Well, I think full-blooded narcissism is actually quite rare. I think it's probably found through human history. There's certainly been monsters, tyrants, people who imposed their will on other people, people who had undue self-confidence, conceit, the inability to listen to others, and that goes along with things like pig-headedness and so on. And I think they're probably found throughout human history. Whether there are more of them now or fewer, I don't know. I think that in some respects, I think they're more. They certainly stalk boardrooms. One of the most amusing pages, I think, in my book is where I cite some psychological results showing that in the UK, at any rate, top CEOs as a group scored worse than the inmates of Broadmoor. Now, Broadmoor is the premier institution for the criminally insane, people who committed crime but been judged insane by the courts. And it turns out the top business managers as a whole score much worse on personality disorder tests than the inmates of Broadmoor. So that suggests that some things like this are on the... They're far too common. Whether they're on the rise or not, I don't know, but they're far too common.
Well, Simon Blackburn, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much, Virginia.
Simon Blackburn, a philosopher and professor emeritus at Cambridge University. He's author of several books, most recently Mirror, Mirror, The Uses and Abuses of Self-Love. You can read his essay, Know Thy Selfie. We found it at aon.com, and we have a link to it at wordofmouthradio.org.